This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the 1st of November 2013. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of November 2013, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Your readers today are Ellen Gray.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. So let's have a look at what's on, shall we? It's Mayflower Theatre in Southampton. There's Ghost on from November the 9th, and there's 7:30 p.m. and matinees Thursday 2 p.m. and Saturday 2:30 p.m. and also there's Scrooge Tuesday to Saturday November the 12th to the 16th, and that's also 7:30 in the evening, matinees Wednesday and Thursday 2 p.m. Saturday 3 p.m. and it's got Tommy Steele in it. Wow. And the box office number for that is 023-8071-1811. And at Nuffield Theatre in Southampton. Yes, the Nuffield Theatre Southampton is Josh Widdicombe on Saturday, November the 9th at 7:30 p.m. For details of that, 023-8067-1771. In Romsey at the Plaza Theatre, there is J.B. Priestley's When We Are Married, a gloriously timeless comedy about class and hypocrisy. That's the 19th to the 23rd of November. They've got a box office number, 01794-512987. In the city itself, Winchester, there's the Theatre Royal that has got a Alice in Wonderland, a brave new adaptation with an all-female cast. Thursday the 7th of November at 7:30 p.m. Friday the 8th. And Saturday the 9th of November at 8 o'clock. Also, there are Look Stranger with readings by Sam West, presented by Utter Jazz. Sunday the 17th of November at 7:30 p.m. And finally, there's Beauty and the Beast, Saturday 16th of November at 7:30 p.m. And for all details there, the box office number is 01962-840-440. And we've got details of a local boy. One of Winchester's most influential musicians is coming home. Chris T.T. returns to the city on November the 13th, supporting Emily Barker and the Red Clay Halo at Discovery Centre. The singer-songwriter follows that up with a tour of his own supporting his ninth studio album, The Bear, which begins in Cardiff on November the 24th and ends in Portsmouth on December the 22nd. His tour takes on extra significance as it also marks the 20th birthday of his beard. The Bear is Chris's third album on Extra Mile Recordings and was recorded with his band The Hoodrats. It is described as a psych rock record with nods to Hold Steady, Blur, The Faces and Animals. Now based in Brighton, Chris is also a writer, having been published in the Huffington Post, the Morning Star and New Public Thinkers. Meanwhile, Emily Barker and her band blend classical, country, rock and folk and have written BAFTA and Ivor Novello, winning themes to the hit BBC dramas Wallander and The Shadow Line. The Discovery Centre gig is now sold out, but for more details on Chris's tour, visit www.christt.com. And lighting up time ends on Friday the 1st of November at 6:59 a.m. begins at 4:40 p.m. On Wednesday the 6th of November it ends at 7:07 a.m. and begins at 4:31 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826 and she will then send you a replacement. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, Before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. The three front page headline stories this week are Family's Lucky Escape, Shared Space is a Recipe for Disaster, and Sweeping Job Cuts Approved. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please? Ellen.
Family's Lucky Escape. A Winchester family had a lucky escape when a tree came crashing down, narrowly missing their house after it was blown over in Monday's storm. And there's a large photograph of a leafy Cheriton Road, full of, lined with cars, and at the front, the fallen tree blocking them so they can't move, with several pedestrians this side looking on. The tree fell in Cheriton Road, Winchester, above, and blocked traffic for most of the day. Fortunately, the Westgate School opposite was closed for the half-term holiday. The tree landed in the front garden of Lawrence Portney, and Mr. Portney, aged 47, a chartered surveyor, said, "My wife and I were sleeping, but at about 5:30 a.m. we heard this massive crash and we jumped out of bed. We didn't hear any wind or anything, it was just this almighty crash, and we looked out the window and there was a tree there. It's lucky it wasn't the next one along, because it would have come right down on my cars. The tree missed the house by metres and fell on the garden gate." Mr. Pulteney said he had called the county council to remove the tree and did not know how much the gate damage would cost to repair. He added, "The trees have always been a nightmare here. They've always been dodgy in the high winds. I think they should be crowned because they're too heavy at the top, but the highways agency has always said it doesn't have the money for it."
Second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, Shared Space is a Recipe for Disaster. Concern for latest Barton Farm road scheme. A new row is brewing on road safety at the Barton Farm development, which is set to use a controversial shared space area for cars and pedestrians. Current plans show the heart of the 2,000-home development has junctions without traffic lights. The concept, common on the continent, works by making pedestrians and drivers much more conscious of each other. In the past, it has been proposed for Jury Street in the city centre. County Councillor Jackie Porter said, "We want pedestrians to take precedence, otherwise it won't be shared space, and at the moment I have not seen anything to suggest that will be the case. Children using that area are a great concern, because there will be times when a lot of them are trying to get to school, and there will need to be adult intervention. The County Council is reviewing all of its crossing patrols, so there's no certainty that there will be any such provision." Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I hope it works, but it requires drivers to be rather more careful than most of them seem to be at the moment. Drivers are not used to these sorts of junctions, and that could be a recipe for disaster. But shared space is nothing new in many parts of Europe." Mike Emmett, a director at Developer Carla, said, "I absolutely disagree with people who say shared space is of itself a danger. We understand that what is right in Switzerland is not necessarily right in the UK. But I think we could have this conversation in a year's time, and Barton Farm could be held up as an innovative and exemplar way of resolving traffic conflict. It is understood the county's highways officers and the city's council officers also favour the plans." Martin Cassini, a campaigner on traffic management, said, "Winchester should look to Poynton near Manchester and Portishead near Bristol for examples of shared space already working well. We have grown up with the rules of the road programmed into us about respecting cars," he said, "but the motorist should beware the child rather than the other way round. Suddenly, when there are no traffic lights to micromanage our every move, then when we approach a junction, we're not zooming through to make it through while the lights are on green. We're approaching carefully because we do not want to hit anyone. It's about designing a road which doesn't make us blindly obey traffic engineering regulations. That's a fatal flaw in the current system."
The third headline, please, Jane.
And that is Sweeping Job Cuts Approved, Union and Opposition to Fight Losses. Tory county chiefs are pressing ahead with plans to axe 1,000 council staff by 2015, on top of the 1,800 posts already shared over the past 3 years. Taxpayers face forking out millions in payoffs as staff will again be offered an enhanced voluntary redundancy scheme. A council manager on a £75,000 salary, who worked for the council for 15 years, could be in line for £56,000 of public money, about seven times the statutory minimum. Payouts are capped at 40 weeks' salary. The Cabinet on Monday approved plans for sweeping job cuts as part of a drive to cut costs by £93 million in 2015-16. The local authority has already set aside £10 million from reserves for bigger payouts for voluntary departures, although the latest round of job cuts still has to be debated at full council. Meanwhile, UKIP has joined forces with Labour councillors and the Uniston Trade Union in a bid to fight the job losses, a move slammed by Council Chief Roy Perry as an unholy alliance. Councillor Perry said, "I think Unite and Labour were responsible for taking this country's economy to the dogs, and now UKIP are forming an allegiance with them." The council, which employs around 40,000 people, is responsible for services including libraries, adult and children's social care, and roads maintenance. Each department is being asked to find 12% savings. Speaking at Cabinet, Councillor Tony Hook, deputy leader of the 10-strong UKIP group on the council, made a plea for jobs to be spared the axe. Councillor Hook said, "The soft underbelly of the council and its workforce had already gone, and the job losses would cut deeply into frontline services." He said UKIP had formed the Historic Alliance with the aim of working with council chiefs to find a way of saving money rather than cutting jobs. Councillor Stephen Reid, executive member responsible for human resources, confirmed about 1,000 jobs could go. He said there was no magic bullet to transforming the council, but savings were needed to cope with reduced government funding.
And that concludes the front page headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum, first person and chronicle comment. Start with the death notices. Atkinson, Robert Ernest Atkinson, peacefully in Winchester, aged 63. Bourne, Nicholas John Bourne, aged 79, after a long illness. Hancock, Peter Brian Hancock. Warne, Michael Henry Warne, peacefully at home, aged 79. And now we've got Christian comment read by Ellen.
A time to remember and honour the saints. Here it is again. All Hallows' Eve, Halloween or Samhain, as the Celts call their New Year festival, the most magical night of the year. For children today, it brings a night of glowing jack-o'-lanterns made from turnips or pumpkins, ducking for apples, trick-or-treating and dressing up in ghoulish costumes. It's a night for ghost stories, a spirit night, or maybe the last fling of the evil ones before the feast of the following day. What a pity the fun obscures the day that follows. A celebration of All Saints, especially when Christians need to call on those holy ones who have faced courageously what we face today, the economic hardship that has brought homelessness, hunger, and the inability to afford heating. Eat or heat, that's the dilemma, facing those who return food to the food banks because they can't afford to warm it up. So who should be remembered on All Saints' Day? Those who faced hunger and homelessness and committed themselves to doing something about it? What about Dorothy Day, the United States founder of the Catholic Worker Movement, who died in 1980? She founded, initially in New York, houses of hospitality for the homeless and unemployed, where they were welcomed, fed, given a home and restored dignity. In each person, Dorothy Day saw the face of Christ. She fought to her last days the structural justice in violence that caused homelessness in the first place. Today, 227 Catholic worker communities are committed to non-violence, voluntary poverty, prayer and hospitality for the homeless, exiled, hungry and forsaken. Catholic workers in the United Kingdom, too, protest injustice, war, racism and violence of all forms. They live a simple lifestyle in community, serve the poor, resist war and social injustice. But let's also honour the Abbé Pierre, founder of the first Emmaus project in Paris in 1949. Emmaus in Winchester, increasingly respected for its work with the homeless, owes much to him. Originally, in the Emmaus community, volunteers helped by providing accommodation and somewhere to eat and work. A number of volunteers were also formerly homeless themselves. The Abbé Pierre, also a deputy in the French government, strived to show desperate people they too could help others. The weakest could still help even weaker people. Emmaus communities quickly spread worldwide. I worked with one in a shanty town outside Paris, an unforgettable experience. So after all the fun with hobgoblins and witches, let's move on to honour those saints who can inspire us with our own problems. Mary Gray.
We've got 9 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Louise Morgan says, "Why such urgency to spend £25 million? Sir, I urge the City Council to cease fast-tracking their proposal to build a new leisure centre on Greenfields at River Park. I refute all accusations of nimbyism for the following reasons. Councillor Wood stated at the Guildhall on September the 26th that for over a year Tesco had refused to engage in dialogue regarding the Bar End site. However, within less than a week of emailing Tesco, I received a reply from their corporate affairs manager. He said that, quotes, until last week, we were not aware of any approach from the council to discuss this with us. However, since seeing the coverage, I have arranged a meeting with the council and we are due to meet later this month. Winchester Action on Climate Change succinctly sums up the city's traffic and pollution problems. Winchester suffers from major levels of traffic congestion and high levels per capita of carbon dioxide emission. A state-of-the-art leisure centre plonked in the city, attracting many visitors from out of town, is madness. We shall be gridlocked and pedestrians and cyclists will be choked with fumes. The council's own research identifies a deficit of open space in the city, and yet these plans are being hot-footed along as though we have a glut. Why such urgency to spend £25 million without proper research? I challenge the council for an explanation, particularly as the Chronicle recently reported a £6 million council budget shortfall within 5 years. The council's duty is to provide us with open, honest, imaginative proposal. We are their electorate, after all. We have spoken and we deserve to be heard. Louise Morgan, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester."
And Jill Davies writes, "Time to heed the people he serves. Sir, I write in response to the article regarding plans for a new leisure centre published in your issue of October the 24th. Councillor Keith Wood's instruction to Cabinet talks of 4 options. It would appear he continues to mislead even his own councillors, let alone the general public. Option 1 is a new build centre at Bar End using the playing fields. This need not be the case, especially if Tesco will lease or sell their land at Bar End. Winchester Fit for the Future's report details a compelling case for Bar End, which, with a configuration of pitches, will result in no loss of playing field space at all. Option 2 is a new build at North Walls, using the tennis courts, artificial turf pitch and a strip of land alongside. Option 3 is a new build using the tennis courts, artificial turf pitch and a significant part of the existing leisure centre site. A strip of land this will not be. Mr Wood should reread the Savills report commissioned by his own council, because section 418 describes how the new building would occupy most of the area of the existing cricket pitch, resulting in complete changing character of this part of the site from open recreation ground to built development. Option 4, to refurbish the existing leisure centre, should be a staged rebuild, but within the same footprint. It is pointless throwing money at a building well past its sell-by date, and I am certain Councillor Wood knows this. I urge him not to build on the tennis courts, Astro Pitch, or any strip of land at North Walls, but to listen to the people he serves and to stop misleading us all. And that was from Jill Davies, Nun Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Tabitha Burgess also takes issue with Councillor Wood. Let's have reasoned debate about issues. Sir, Councillor Woods proposes to build a large leisure centre on one of Winchester's few city centre green spaces and convert the existing site into parking spaces when regenerating the current site would surely seem a more sensible option. Whether that be refurbishing or redeveloping the site would depend on long-term needs, but to propose that the parking area is enlarged as part of any development undermines the efforts made to discourage car users from coming into Winchester and using park and ride. As a resident, taxpayer and user of the current facility, I'd like a reasoned debate about the issues involved. Most Wintonians would like a more complete and open consultation carried out on the range of potential locations and facilities of a new or updated centre, as well as a clearer analysis of the long-term financial success of any new facility. Until it has been established what the long-term needs are and an investigation carried out into the full range of options, it would be foolish to put forward a preferred site, particularly one that would deprive the city of one of its premier green spaces. There has been an overwhelming response from residents, the local MP and councillors, urging a rethink and the thorough research needed to ensure the success of any new facility, whether based at its current location or elsewhere. Tabitha Burgess, Nuns Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Councillors should see for themselves, says Giles Gooding. Sir, you would think that before making the decision on the Bullington Cross wind farm, the Winchester City Council Planning Committee would try to find out all the facts. They will, of course, have a plethora of information and data supplied by the energy company, but nothing will surpass visiting one of these turbines to see and hear for themselves. It was a great idea of Martin Heath to invite all 14 members of the committee to West Mill in Oxfordshire, and such a shame that only two accepted. Credit to councillors Pearson and Rutter, who spent time investigating and dispelling some of the myths about wind turbines. Hampshire residents are large consumers of energy, but we generate very little of it ourselves. We depend on large polluting power stations built near other people for our benefit. Bullington Cross is one of the few places in Hampshire where it is viable to erect a wind turbine, so we should support it as part of the solution to cleaning up our energy supply. It is usual for planning committees to visit the site of a proposed construction, and I think in this case it is right to also visit a working turbine as well. They vote in February, and before that time, all other committee members should be requested to visit a wind turbine or lose their vote. Giles Gooding, Fordington Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
And Robert Smith writes that fracking on a large scale is the only option. Sir, as a concerned citizen who quite likes electricity and other benefits of first world living, I was perturbed to see Keith Taylor, MEP, reheating old fracking myths. Letters, October the 24th. Once for all, shale fuel extraction doesn't pollute the water table, doesn't cause earthquakes, and certainly doesn't set your taps on fire, another favourite claim of wind lobbyists. These myths have been debunked again and again. Shale even produces less CO2 than conventional gases. Catastrophic mismanagement of our energy policy by successive governments has left this country in dire straits. Excessive bills are only one aspect. This year alone, several functioning power plants have been closed by the EU, while others are becoming obsolete. This winter, the safety margin between electricity generation and demand will be only 5%. Ironically, only the economic recession, which cut industrial demand for energy, has saved the country from blackouts up to now. Now the recovery is underway, the safety margin will drop below 5%. The possibility of severe electrical shortages in the coming years is all too real. While evidence from abroad does show that domestic shale gas exploitation reduces energy prices, High prices might be worth paying anyway for the undoubted security of supply it guarantees. The Greens seem to want the UK to revert to a medieval subsistence economy, powered exclusively by windmills, forward to the Dark Ages, literally. All others should be hoping for large-scale fracking to begin soon. It's our only option. Happily, frack pads are less intrusive than wind farms and produce vastly more electricity. I would let them build one in my back garden, because, as I said, I rather appreciate electric light and other modern conveniences. And that was Robert Smith, Stony Lane, Winchester.
Phil Yates reminds us of the Gang of Six who saved the Theatre Royal. Sir Belgarum was right when stating it was a close-run thing that the Theatre Royal is still here today in the Chronicle, October 24th. It cannot be stressed too much that it was a very close shave, and perhaps audiences attending the theatre today do not fully appreciate how lucky they are to have such a delightful venue for their entertainment. When Star Group of Cinemas from Leeds announced in June 1974 that it intended to apply for a demolition order to clear the site for commercial purposes, an action group of citizens interested in all aspects of theatre was instigated to save the building. The Gang of Six, as we became known, were Stanley Steele, Barry Richardson, David Harding, Richard Chisnell, Tony Hunter and myself. Lady Jenny Bland soon joined us. It took 4 years and many sleepless nights to negotiate a sale, and with the help of Winchester City Council, the Sainsbury Trust, Peter Cadbury and other donors, the theatre was purchased in April 1977 and reopened on November 1st, 1978. At one time, Bijam, predecessor to Iceland, were keen to build their supermarket on the site. The theatre celebrates its 100th anniversary on August 24th, 2014, and the remaining four of the six hope to meet up again next July to celebrate the 40th anniversary of their first meeting to save a theatre for Winchester. Phil Yates, honorary historian and archivist, Tower Street, Winchester.
Neil Holmes writes that bungalows may still be possible. Sir, I would like to correct your report in the Chronicle, October the 17th, on the public meeting to discuss the potential residential developments on Topfield, Kingsworthy. We did not rule out changing the plans or consider bungalows to be inappropriate. The purpose of the consultation was to elicit comments and suggestions from residents, and we will consider all the points raised, including the provision of bungalows. My response merely confirmed that bungalows are difficult to develop economically because they take up more land and are more expensive to build than two-storey dwellings. If the planning authority supports the provision of bungalows, we'll revise the layout to include some. We would also like to clarify that some 1,000 households would like to live in Kingsworthy, 100 of which have local connections. The affordable element of the development currently under construction includes 10 shared equity dwellings, which will give households with local links an opportunity to get on the housing ladder, in addition to providing 15 affordable rental dwellings. Neil Holmes, Quayside Architects, Burgess Road, Southampton, and the editors replied, "The public meeting was told that building bungalows on the land in question was not appropriate. However, we're happy to clarify Quayside Architects' position."
And this letter from Joanna Morgan is "Jubilee Project Should Be Protected." And it's accompanied by a particularly lovely picture of the Hyde Abbey Garden glass artwork by Tracy Shepherd, which is situated in the Abbey Gardens. "Sir, the committee and friends of Hyde Abbey Gardens are very concerned about the possible redevelopment of River Park Leisure Centre. This entails an enlarged facility on the site of the existing tennis courts and extending onto the cricket field. This will destroy the view from the garden and its peaceful setting, not to mention the view through Tracy Shepherd's beautiful glass panel. The garden is a place of special meaning to residents and tourists alike. It will become even more special if any of the bones taken from outside St. Bartholomew's Church prove to be those of King Alfred. The garden was the city's Jubilee project and should be protected as such. We are not against additional leisure facilities, but feel there needs to be far more information about the proposed sites and urge the council to delay the vote in early November so the people of Winchester and beyond can be fully consulted. And that was from Joanna Morgan, Monk's Road, Winchester.
Hugh Marchant writes about Hampshire being so cool on the 20-mile-an-hour limit. Sir, may I express our support for Chil Bolton's campaign for a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in their village? We wish them every success in their deputation to Hampshire County Council's Environment and Transport Select Committee on November the 5th. In our picturesque network of lanes within the delightful New Forest parish of Sway, 84% of residents have signed a petition in favour of a 20-mile-an-hour limit. On the basis of this overwhelming community support, we've been campaigning for over a year to implement a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, with little progress. And as such, we can understand Chil Bolton's frustration at the lack of progress on their proposals. The government is trying to make it easier for communities to help determine their own futures, and the new Department of Transport guidance on local speed limits issued earlier this year reflects this. As a result, one in six people in the United Kingdom now lives in or close to areas where a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit is or soon will be in force. But so few schemes have been approved in Hampshire that here this figure's probably closer to 1 in 120. Why does Hampshire not wish to implement 20-mile-an-hour speed limits when elsewhere it's becoming the norm? We wish David Budd and his team every success in their forthcoming meeting at Hampshire County Council. Hugh Marchant, Paul's Lane, Sway, Lymington.
And that's the end of the letters to the editor, thanks to all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. We ask passers-by, trick-or-treating, is it just harmless fun or has it become a nuisance? Noel has the replies.
Well, Geordie Tor, 44, an IT worker of St Giles Hill, Winchester, said, I think it's harmless fun and my partner will be taking our daughters, Sarah 8 and Zoe 6, out on the night in their zombie and witch costumes. And Jenny Axon, 34, Denplan trainer of Winchester, said, I don't have a problem as I live in a flat and have always had something to give them, but it can be a nuisance for the elderly who may not be ready for constant disturbances on the evening. And Margaret Cole, 83, Lollipop Lady of Fox Lane, Stanmore, said, I've no problem with the children coming round on the night, as I've been a Lollipop Lady for 38 years, and so I'm used to dealing with them. And Kenneth Wingate, 54, a cleaner of Eastleigh, said, I'm all for it, and have no problem at all with the children and their parents knocking on doors. It's only once a year, after all. You can have your say or any other topic at letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL.
And now we're going back through the years for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago, that's October the 28th, 1988, rather appropriately, Leisure Centre finally opens. The echoes of hammers and pneumatic drills at last gave way yesterday to the squeals of excited children as the best leisure centre in the South finally opened its doors. Winchester's River Park Leisure Centre is up and running after fire destroyed the west side of the old North Walls Recreation Centre. But as the city's swimmers took the plunge yesterday morning, questions remained about the lengthy delay in getting the centre back into action. Although the contract to complete the pool was almost 5 months overdue, there remain as many as 30 minor defects, the most serious being a distinctly visible leak in the splashdown pool for the new children's water slide. The second article from 25 years ago is Insatiable demand for development threatens Winchester's green spaces, and ever-increasing traffic clogs the city's streets. And both Winchester City and Hampshire County Councils come under attack in the annual report of the Winchester Preservation Trust Chairman David Middleditch. It is particularly bad that the local authorities themselves are setting such bad examples, says Mr. Middleditch. The Brooks development is an example of the local council being tempted by highly lucrative deals to compromise on restraint policies and overdevelop the site, he said.
Let's go back to 50 years ago now, Ellen, please.
November the 2nd, 1963, and there are two items. The first is objections to railway closure. Romsey and Andover joined forces on Wednesday in an effort to prevent the withdrawal of passenger trains from the railway line between the two towns. It was standing room only at Andover Town Hall as objectors put their cases to the South East Area Transport Users Consultative Committee. One of the main objectors were Romsey Borough Council, who put their case through the town clerk, Mr. C.C.E. Holmes. Romsey, he said, was a growing town. The new sewerage scheme lately introduced was capable of catering for 12,000 people, double the present population. And with this expected increase in population, the transport problems are likely to double, and therefore the hardships are likely to double, he declared. And the second item tells us that Hampshire County Council and Alton Rural District Council are to be asked to approve the principle of the comprehensive development of the Borden and White Hill area. If this approval is given, the County Planning Officer, Mr. A.D.G. Smart, will prepare a master plan and town map.
Let's go back 100 years then, Noel.
Yes, two items from November the 1st, 1913. And one has a headline, Stolen Cricket Medals on Sale. The medals which were to be presented to the members of the St Mary's cricket team, who won the First Division Championship of the Southampton Public Grounds Cricket League, mysteriously disappeared during transit from Birmingham to Southampton last week. The medals were sent by passenger train, and it's presumed that they were stolen when transferred to the Southampton train at Eastleigh. It is stated that a small boy was subsequently discovered selling the medals at 2 a penny in Eastleigh. One of his purchasers took the medals to a jeweller, whose suspicions became aroused and led to the intervention of the police. With one exception, all the medals have now been recovered. And the second item, with wheat at 30 shillings per quarter, £60 to the bushel, with bread selling at £8 to the gallon, if the price of bread is 11 pence, this is apportioned to the farmer, 5 pence, to the miller, 1 penny, and one penny and 1 farthing, to the baker, 4 and 3 farthings, 11 pence. It must be obvious that where the employer is faced with the cry of the increased cost of living of his workpeople, especially in the case of farmers who sell the cheap wheat, to try and induce the bakers to be moderate in their charges and profits is only reasonable.
And 200 years ago, November the 1st, 1813, candle causes gas explosion. On Monday, the neighbourhood of Great Peter Street, Westminster, was thrown into much confusion and alarm by a gaslight explosion, which shook the surrounding houses, broke many windows, and threatened fire in every direction. It appeared that a pipe unexpectedly burst in the premises of the Gas Light and Coke Company. By this means, much gas oozed out and filled the apartment. But not calculating on this, one of the men took a candle and proceeded to the spot to ascertain what was the matter. The moment the candle was introduced, the whole of the gas that had escaped from the pipe burst into flame with a dreadful explosion. And the second item, the French accounts of the campaign inform us that the emperor never was better. If the poor deluded French understand this in any favourable meaning, they must be deluded indeed. Never better? Was he not better when, in 1804, he was crowned Emperor of the French? Was he not better in 1805, when he usurped the kingdom of Italy? Was he not better when he gained the victory of Austerlitz and annihilated Prussia? And lastly, was he not better in the summer of last year, before he took it into his head to sacrifice 600,000 men to the mad ambition of conquering a Russian climate?
Ellen's got Belgarum for us now.
An alternative look at the news, and there are three items. Derek goes straight to the top title at Newbury, and there's a picture of an impressive-looking tractor in a completely empty field, just the guy on his tractor. Good to see the traditional skill of ploughing being highlighted once again. Derek Turner of Sutton Scotney took the Champion Ploughman Prize at the Newbury and District Agricultural Society's ploughing match on October the 19th, when modern equipment that turns over 5 acres of land in an hour competed against vintage ploughs. Said match chairman Michael Bowden, "We have 47 entries in 6 classes, which is a bit lower than average, but there was a good range of vintage, conventional and modern machines. There was even a steam plough and an example of an old diesel engine." So what makes a good ploughman? The judges look for neat, even furrows. The start and finish are particularly important. You can see the ploughmen using a tape measure to ensure the final furrow is perfectly in line. The second item is about Celia Imrie. Celia sells herself short. Winchester University academic Chris Grover has contacted Belgarum after seeing the coverage of actress Celia Imrie receiving an honorary doctorate in the cathedral last week. The actress had told the Chronicle that she was related to a former Bishop of Winchester. But Dr. Grover, author of Hyde from Disillusion to Victorian Suburb, says Celia's links to Winchester go much deeper, and her forebears had an immense impact on the religious community in the city, especially Hyde. If history had taken a slightly different course, Celia's family would still be the owners of Hyde Abbey, said Dr. Grover. Celia is a descendant from Rachel Wrothesley, daughter of the 4th Earl of Southampton. The first Earl was Thomas Wrothesley, who visited Winchester's monasteries to carry out Henry VIII's wish to close them. As a result, Hyde Abbey and other religious institutions were destroyed. Wrothesley benefited hugely, accumulating land throughout Hampshire, including Bewley and Titchfield, as well as the site of Hyde Abbey, which he sold, and the manors of Abbotsworthy and Micheldever, which passed down through the Bedford family. The site of Hyde Abbey, burial place of King Alfred, was held by the 4th Duke of Bedford during the 1700s until financial problems forced its sale to the neighbouring landowner of Abbots Barton, Thomas Knight. Knight was also the owner of Chawton and Godmersham and a distant relative of Jane Austen, and it was his son who, failing to produce an heir, left his estates, including Abbots Barton, to Jane's brother Edward. And the last item is, now it's Dr. Langlands. Winchester University's best-known postgrad TV presenter has completed his PhD. Alex Langlands, above, has become a familiar face after appearing in BBC Two's Victorian Farm, Edwardian Farm and Wartime Farm. There's a photograph of him leaning against a tree wearing a cap with a very broad grin on his face. His PhD was a blend of historical and archaeological research, focusing on the early medieval landscape of Wessex and the theme of travel and communication. I've had a thoroughly enjoyable time at the university. The PhD has enabled me to set in motion some of my skills as an archaeologist, whilst also learning new ways of thinking about this important part of our history. I'm forever indebted to my supervisors, Professor Barbara York and Ryan Lavelle, for the support and encouragement they've given me over the last 5 years. And now it's time to get out into the big wide world and put my new qualification to work, added Alex. I have a number of projects in the development stages, but as far as the University of Winchester is concerned, I hope this is not goodbye.
And it's time for First Person, read by Noel.
Yes, Khalid Aziz says, my veggies are the most expensive money can buy. Will I never learn? Every year I start with the greatest of enthusiasm to grow the best vegetables money can buy. The results are invariably the same. They are seldom the best, but certainly when you cost in my time and effort, a lot of money is involved. For decades now, I have been growing certainly the most expensive vegetables money can buy. If it was down to reading seed catalogues and trawling the internet, all would be well. But everything I touch seems to go wrong. True, I get some sort of harvest, but if I had to rely on my own efforts to feed my family, the Aziz clan would have died out long ago. The season invariably starts well enough, but despite having that old gardening saw, not too early, not too deep, not too cold, etc., ringing in my ears, I plant up pots and trays of seeds when it is far too early and certainly too cold. Even in a heated propagator in the greenhouse, most things fail to germinate. Mind you, this was a late year, but fool that I am, I worried about getting beyond the calendar dates for planting recommended on the seed packets. 6 weeks later, I started again. This time, spring had sprung, albeit in a desultory way. Up came the seeds, and I was filled with the usual feelings of birth and renewal as I surveyed my rows of new germination. Given my chaotic schedule, I'd set up automatic irrigation. If expense was the sole criterion for successful gardening, I'd be giving Mr. Titchmarsh a run for his money, and my seedlings were thriving. And so were the slugs, which regarded the permanently damp environment I had thoughtfully provided in the same way as a burglar looks upon an open window. I slide open the greenhouse door a few days later, and devastation. The application of some bright blue slug pellets halted the slimy so-and-sos, and I had enough plants left to transplant into grow bags. However, by this time it was too late. Plants grew, but all too slowly. The tomatoes were small, despite the application of liquid fertiliser. Mind you, it didn't help that for the first time I was into planting with African marigolds in an organic bid to keep the bugs down. I planted far too many. They did so well, they choked and denied sustenance to my precious tomatoes. My chilies and peppers fared better, but only slightly. I thought I had a saving grace in butternut squash. After months of nothing, they finally germinated. As per instructions, I transplanted them into the raised beds. They flowered and eventually fruited. Tiles were dutifully placed under each tiny squash. But I fear it's all too late. As I write, it's chucking it down, and the sun and warmth required to finish the job is a vague memory. The trouble is, despite the disappointment, I shall undoubtedly do it all again next year.
It's editorial comment then, Jane.
And the editorial comment this week is, Leading the Way or a Recipe for Disaster? A recipe for disaster or a shining example for other towns and cities in the UK to follow? That's the question being asked as developer Carla and council chiefs are proposing shared space at the heart of the 2000 home estate at Barton Farm. It means the rerouted Andover Road, which will have an estimated 16,000 vehicles per day, won't have any traffic lights at junctions through the new estate. The idea is it will make drivers and pedestrians more aware of each other. Common on the continent, it has previously been proposed for Jury Street in the city centre. But County Councillor Jackie Porter is right to raise concerns over the safety of children crossing what will be a busy road. Even if there is a crossing patrol, it will only be at the beginning and end of the school day. City Councillor Jane Rutter thinks it could be a recipe for disaster, while Carla Director Mike Emmett believes Barton Farm could be an innovative and exemplary way of resolving trafficked conflict. For locals struggling with the sense of diverting thousands of vehicles through the giant housing estate, this may be the last straw. Only time will tell if it is a good idea.
Now we continue with items of general news, beginning with one read by Ellen.
And it's another tree disaster. Couple's lucky escape as gale topples 60-foot birch. A couple in Chandler's Ford had a narrow escape after they noticed that a 60-foot tree in their garden was rapidly becoming uprooted. Woken by the Monday morning storm, they peered out of an upstairs window and saw the silver birch just feet from their home totter as its roots loosed their grip on the ground. My husband could see the base of the tree moving, Anne Thick said. Fearing that the skyscraper tree would crash onto their chalet bungalow, her husband Gordon said they should go down to the ground floor immediately and shelter there, but the tree fell before we even got downstairs, Anne said. Luckily, the birch missed the house in Gordon Road and landed relatively harmlessly across two gardens. They cut it back, or had it cut back, and the base of the trunk and the roots fell back into the hole in the ground when the rest of it was sawn away. And there's a photograph of them standing by this trunk of the tree, looking very relieved that it's gone now.
Celebrating 25 years of volunteering. It's been leading the charge for volunteers in Winchester for 25 years. Winchester Area Community Action, WACA, celebrated a quarter century in the city at its AGM last Thursday. Last year, it helped thousands of people with issues including transport, employment and mental health. WACA supported 191 organisations seeking volunteers, helped 69 unemployed people find work, and placed 347 people into volunteer schemes. Its group's development service supported 39 grant applications from voluntary organisations, generating £261,240 funding. Chairman Paul Williams said, "Certainly WACA benefits from the huge number of volunteers who support our organisation, but more importantly, so do the voluntary and community groups and vulnerable and disadvantaged individuals they also support. In August this year, WACA had 146 volunteers helping deliver 8 of its services, representing an economic benefit to the district of £236,350." Mr. Williams added, "By providing a range of services from driving to interviewing, from counselling to befriending, from facilitation to support, these volunteers provide a crucial role to WACA's service users. Their time and effort greatly enhances WACA's ability to deliver our services as well as help the wider community." WACA made an operational deficit of £65,000 last year. But Mr. Williams said that the accounts were solvent and the board was continuing to look for new funding sources. He added, "We have at least 3 months' running costs in unrestricted reserves at the moment, which is recognised as best practice in the charitable sector." Meanwhile, WACA services helped hundreds of vulnerable people, including the Mental Health Befriending Service, which trained 28 volunteers to help 32 people. Its Dial-A-Ride scheme gave transport to 12,451 passengers, 1,213 of which were disabled, and the Shop Mobility Project helped 178 people get around the city on motorised scooters.
And this one is "Wear your poppy with pride," says the mayor. And there is a photograph of the mayor and his wife, both sporting poppies on their jackets. The Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester have shown their support for the annual poppy appeal. Ernie and Barbara Jeffs, speaking on the steps of Abbey House with their dog Charlie, as is shown in the picture, said, "The Royal British Legion gives such vital support to our armed forces personnel, both serving and non-serving. It's an organisation that is always there and provides essential help to service personnel and their families in times of need. It is worth remembering that these brave fellows are always there to defend our shores. Without them in this country, wouldn't enjoy the freedom it does today. That's why we contribute to the poppy appeal." Meanwhile, Winchester will remember the fallen once again next month. The traditional Remembrance Sunday service takes place at the cathedral at 10 a.m. on Sunday, November the 10th. It is followed by the act of remembrance at the War Memorial at 11 a.m, including wreath laying. The preacher this year will be the Venerable Ray Pentland, CBQHC, Chaplain-in-Chief and Archdeacon for the Royal Air Force. There will also be a 2 minute silence at 11 a.m. on Monday, November the 11th, at the Cathedral and Visitors' Centre. Anyone attending the Cathedral should arrive before 10:55 a.m.
Boost to Cathedral Appeal as Earl takes patron role. £5 million is needed to transform the visitor experience. The Earl of Wessex is now the royal patron of the Winchester Cathedral Capital Appeal. The cathedral is seating £5 million to transform the experience of visitors through much-needed expert conservation and repair of the church fabric. It also wants to create 3 new exhibitions called Kings and Scribes, The Birth of a Nation, giving better access to its treasures, and a refurbished and extended learning centre. The Dean, the Very Reverend James Atwell, said, I am delighted that the Earl of Wessex has agreed to be the royal patron of this appeal. He has already visited and demonstrated a keen interest. His support will bring encouragement and renewed energy. Prince Edward's patronage marvellously identifies Winchester's royal associations with the House of Wessex and the birth of our nation. And there's a photograph of the Dean in his red garb, pointing details of the plans out to both the Earl of Wessex and Nigel Atkinson, the Vice Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. Dame Mary Fagan, Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire and Chairman of the Appeal, said, "The patronage of the Earl of Wessex affirms once again the restoration and development plans for the cathedral, so recently endorsed by the Heritage Lottery Fund through their £10.5 million grant earlier this year." A royal spokesman said, "The Earl of Wessex is very pleased to become patron. Winchester Cathedral has been witness to extraordinary events, stretching back well beyond Norman times, and its stones and timbers are still witnessing events today. So long as we look after them and help them to weather the storms, they should continue to do so for many, many years to come."
Life-changing day at Diana Awards. Alex's school leads battle against bullying. An anti-bullying campaign at a Chandler's Ford school led to a life-changing day out for one youngster. Alex Morris, 12, is a pupil at Lakeside School for Children with Behavioural Problems and is a member of the school council. As part of an anti-bullying week, the children ran poster competitions and sold wristbands to highlight the school's policy. Their work was recognised by the Diana Award, set up in memory of Princess Diana. The council was named Diana Anti-Bullying Champion for tackling the problem in their community. Alex was chosen to collect it on the council's behalf. "I felt very proud for me and my school to receive the award. The day was exciting and I enjoyed meeting lots of other people. I want to do more work now for homeless and poor people," he said. Head teacher Gareth Evans said, "Alex was fully up for it. The inspirational talk from the Paralympian and 7/7 bombing survivor Martine Wright was amazing, and Alex was gobsmacked. On the way home, he was saying how he wants to win the same award next year and to do more things to help people. That is life-changing proportions." The event, hosted by the Diana Award Committee and Barclays Bank on October the 16th, was held at London's Canary Wharf, and Alex was also accompanied Learning Coordinator Catherine McGregor. She said, "Alex did Lakeside proud. He was one of the first up on stage to receive the honour and cope beautifully with an audience." And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of Alex Morris himself and two other boys from the school, Alfie Tyson and Ben Frankel, looking very smart in their sweatshirt uniform, holding up the certificate of his award, and the head teacher, Gareth Evans, looking on very proud and smiley.
And this one is In Search of the Stones of Hyde Abbey. A unique project is shedding light on the fate of a monastery destroyed by Henry VIII nearly 500 years ago. At the same time, it is showing that recycling is nothing new. Reuniting the Stones of Hyde Abbey reveals how the building material from Winchester Monastery, the burial place of King Alfred the Great, was reused in the following centuries. David Sperling has tracked down salvaged rubble from the abbey in 30 houses in Hyde and 4 in Headburn Worthy, just outside Winchester, where he lives. The exhibition at St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde was the centrepiece of the King Alfred Weekend, which marks the 1114th anniversary of the death of King Alfred. Around 300 people attended the launch event last Friday evening, and the exhibition in the church on Saturday and Sunday. One of the co-organisers, Edward Fennell from the Hyde 900 group, said, "The project is reconnecting the residents of Hyde with their history. People are fascinated by it." He said the research was paying tribute to the skills of the craftsmen who built the monastery that stood from 1100 to 1538. Mr. Sperling has pored over 16th and 17th century documents in the Hampshire Record Office, chasing leads to see what happened to the stones. He has worked closely with Ross Lovett, the head mason at Winchester Cathedral, to then identify the pieces that have been found. Mr. Spurling is keen to hear from anyone who thinks they may have stones from the abbey built into their house. He can be contacted at david@pekingparismorgan.com. That's david@pekingparismorgan.com. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Edward Fennell looking at a carved head from Hyde Abbey, which is now inside St. Bart's Church. And a little fact file. Hyde Abbey was dissolved in the 1530s as part of the power struggle between the church and Henry VIII. Hyde House on Hyde Street, now home to Adam Architecture, was constructed mainly from stones from Hyde Abbey. The stone came from Caen in Normandy, the same as Winchester Cathedral. Some was from Coire on the Isle of Wight. And the bones inside the grave reputed to be Alfred's were exhumed this summer, and permission has been given for them to be analysed.
Street care to spruce up our city. And Winchester Business Improvement District has launched a new plan to clean up the city. The BID has teamed up with the City Council to provide enhanced street care, including routine repairs, redecorating street furniture, and chewing gum removal. The new street care team, funded by the BID, will draw up and complete a schedule of work each week. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Neighbourhoods and Environment, said, "We are delighted to be working with the Winchester BID on this important programme of works throughout the city. A large proportion is basic routine maintenance that can make such a difference to the overall appearance of the streets and the overall shopping experience." BID manager Catherine Turness added, "Chewing gum, trade waste and general maintenance is an ongoing concern for many businesses, and we want to address these issues efficiently." The council is also looking at other improvements, including removing bulk waste bins and refurbishing St. Maurice's Covert.
New name, new era for Science Centre. One of Hampshire's most popular and iconic attractions has celebrated its relaunch with a new name. Winchester Science Centre, formerly known as INTEC, invited guests to a party last Wednesday featuring more than 100 interactive exhibits. Visitors viewed a show in the Astrium Planetarium, the UK's largest, and met Professor Jill Scott, creator of the Neuromedia exhibition, which is currently showing there. The exhibition began as a collaboration between the Zurich University of the Arts, Culturama Science Museum Zurich, and the University of Zurich, and runs until March the 10th next year. The Mornhill Centre had a record number of visitors last year, with more than 150,000 people attending, including 32,000 schoolchildren. It aims to encourage interest in science, engineering and technology. Verena Cornwall, the director of Winchester Science Centre, said, "The collaboration with the Zurich University of the Arts heralds the start of key partnerships relating to science communication that we are working on with universities. The University of Southampton has long been a core partner, and the Science Centre is now reaching out nationally and internationally to involve universities at the heart of new exhibition design. The Science Centre needs to raise £1.6 million per annum in order to run the charity and pay for staffing, the upkeep of the building and the exhibits themselves, with paying visitors central to enabling the charity to deliver its core activities."
And here we have Fish and Chip Shop is a real catch in the city. A businessman is aiming to restore a Winchester fish and chip shop to its former glory. Damien Hunt from Lyndhurst opened Court on St George's Street, that's C-A-U-G-H-T, Court, on St George's Street following the success of his flagship shop in Romsey. Mr Hunt took over the lease shortly after the previous store closed, which he said didn't have the best reputation. "We clean everything every day, which not a lot of chip shops do," he said. "Everything's fresh. We cook fresh potatoes and we get a lot of good feedback on our food. I think we have only been here for about 3 weeks and we're already getting noticed from the name in Romsey." He added, "My focus in this shop for the moment, but I'd like to expand to other market towns eventually. I'm drawn to Winchester. It's always been on my list. It's got a lovely vibe to it." His Romsey shop, which opened 4 years ago, boasts 10 employees, while the new Winchestershaw operates with 6. The business is jointly run with his wife and bookkeeper, Becky. And there's a photograph of a smiling Mr. Hunt in front of his traditional fish and chip shop, Court, in St. George's Street.
Future of City Landmake Mark is assured. And there's a photograph which is in fact a flashback of Hampshire Olympian Danny King on her bike at the opening of Hockley Viaduct, surrounded by other young cyclists to mark the completion of the Sustrans National Cycle Network. Civic chiefs have agreed a deal to protect the long-term future of one of Winchester's most important landmarks. The City Council will sign a 40-year lease with bicycle charity Sustrans, which sees the charity take over maintenance of the Hockley Viaduct. It follows Sustrans teaming up with the Council on a £500,000 project to repair the Victorian railway structure last year and add it to the National Cycle Network. Cabinet rubber-stamped the lease at a meeting last Wednesday, where Councillor Victoria Weston, portfolio holder for Built Environment, said it was a great deal for the Council. She said the lease is 40 years long at £1 per annum, which is great value for the Council. Sustrans will inspect the structure and maintain it in a good condition for the period of the lease. They will be excellent custodians of the viaduct. The Council will pay Sustrans £120,000 as a contribution towards the long-term maintenance of the structure. But Councillor Weston confirmed there was a payback clause in case of a major fault that cannot be repaired. The viaduct was officially made part of the cycle network in February. The brick and concrete structure is more than 600 metres long and has 33 arches.
Aidy's Tales of Bullets and Bombs. Hundreds gathered at Winchester Cathedral last Wednesday to hear Kate Aidy on broadcasting, life and women on the front line. The latter is the title of former war correspondent's latest book, exploring advances in society made by women since the First World War. Anyone who came to hear from the woman in the flak jacket, dodging bullets and reporting from the front line, won't have left disappointed. "I've been bombed by 4 different air forces, including my own," she told the 450-strong crowd. During a question-and-answer session, she admitted, "I get as scared as anybody else, and I scream loudly and continuously. I've done that many times before. Never be afraid to admit it." Organised by the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, the event raised £5,000 for a fundraising appeal to conserve the medieval windows.
And this is your chance to quiz Train Chief. Winchester MP Steve Brine has organised an open meeting for rail users to question the boss of South West Trains. Mr Brine has arranged for Tim Shoveler, Managing Director of South West Trains and the Network Rail Alliance, to answer questions from the public on Thursday, November the 14th at 7:30 p.m. in a central Winchester location to be announced. Mr Brine said, "Each week, thousands of my constituents, including me, board the train and commute up and down the line, and my postback is never quiet on railway issues. I hope the open meeting provides an opportunity for us to discuss in the round a wide range of issues and for rail users to ask whatever they like." Mr Shoveler said, "It's always great to get first-hand feedback from our customers on the services we offer. The frequent sessions we host at our stations prove that our customers find them very useful. Our railway plays a crucial role in the lives of many people and the economic success of the region, and it is therefore really important that we are able to explain our future plans for development and even further improvement. I look forward to meeting customers in Winchester and having an opportunity to debate important issues."
Thief takes bus on a joyride. An investigation is underway into how a thief managed to steal a double-decker bus and go on a joyride across Hampshire. The bus was taken from the Xella bus depot in Eastleigh and found dumped in Nursling, Southampton. Police said it had not been reported stolen, and it appears the company only became aware that the Volvo Olympian bus was missing when they were contacted by the police. The bus went missing between around midday last Saturday and 10:28 a.m. on Monday, when a member of the public reported it to the police because they thought it had broken down and was poorly parked.
Museums merger moves a step closer. Plans to merger Winchester's museum service with its county council counterpart have moved a step closer. The councils want to set up the Hampshire Solent Cultural Trust to manage both services, a move that would save the city council around £130,000 over the next 5 years. Deputy leader Rob Humby said, "This is part of our commitment to making the most of our limited resources. It is not driven by the need for savings, but the wish to give many more people access to our collections and make the most of them. It is a bold and exciting proposal which reflects our council's ambition to establish culture as a key driver for the local economy." Cabinet rubber-stamped the move last Wednesday, and if later approved by full council, the trust could be registered before Christmas and be ready to take over next summer. It would cost around £53,000 to set up, and the city's collections would be leased to the trust for a minimum of 25 years. Councillor Humby added all existing museum staff would be transferred to the trust, while a councillor would sit on the board as an observer to maintain its presence. Officers said they expect visitors to Winchester museums to soar because of the merger. Eloise Appleby, Assistant Director for Economy and Communities, said the business plan looks at a target of 15% increase in visitors in the first 5 years, which is about 15,000 people. The actual impact will be far greater than that, in the region of 27,000 additional users per year, which is an impressive jump. Ms. Appleby later confirmed users do not mean visitors through the door, but people using the museum's website, Facebook page, or making inquiries by phone or email.
And this one is Mums Aim to Bring World of Science to Preschoolers. Two Winchester mums are starting a new venture to teach science to toddlers. Emily White and Sophie Allnut were inspired by their chemistry background to start a new business to introduce preschool children to science. They are concerned that those aged between 2 and 4 years would not experience the subject until school age. Mrs. White said, "There are lots of baby classes in Winchester, but there are no classes for this age group for science. We think you are never too young to learn and are excited about bringing the world of science to preschoolers. The council have seen our future potential and have given us a business start-up grant to help us get some of the equipment we need. We are hoping that we can eventually franchise these classes nationwide with Winchester as the model." The two met at the Eli Lilly pharmaceutical plant in Basingstoke before being made redundant when the plant closed 6 years ago. Since then, they have been busy raising their families. Both have 3 children, and both their eldest children go to St. Peter's School. Mrs. White added, "We have attended lots of classes over the years and seen how much children love to learn at any age. There is a real gap in the market for something science-based in this age group, and so far we have received fantastic feedback from parents on our trial lessons." Launching after half term, Mini Professors has been awarded £1,000 as a start-up grant by the council and offers a mix of music, stories, videos, experiments and the fun of dressing up in lab coats. And there's a photograph of the two ladies with all 6 very small children dressed in white lab coats and looking very enthusiastic about the project in front of them.
Dawson is looking for a premier deal, and this is a cricketing item. Liam Dawson is expected to make his debut for Bangladesh outfit Prime Bank Cricket Club alongside Ravi Bopara today. The Hampshire all-rounder has flown out for a 3-week stint in the 50-over Dakar Premier League with Sean Irvine and hopes to impress enough to earn a deal in the 20-over Bangladesh Premier League. Dawson impressed with bat and ball in Hampshire's 50-over win against Bangladesh 2 months ago, scoring an 87-ball 97 before taking 3 for 11. Now the 23-year-old is ready to pit his wits against the Kalabegan Cricketing Academy in Rajshahi. I'm looking forward to it. It will be a different challenge and somewhere I haven't played before, said Dawson, who scored 1,000 first-class runs in a season for the first time this year. I've had a break for a month or so now, so I might be rusty. I'm looking forward to continuing my form from last season and can't wait to get going. Hopefully, if I do well out there, I'll be able to secure a Bangladesh Premier League deal. It's a big reason for going, so I'm aiming for that. To be contacted to play is a fantastic thing, but to do well and get a BPL deal would be fantastic. It's something I said I wanted to go out and get this year, so I'm looking to secure that. And there's a photograph of Liam Dawson beaming with his bat in the air, clearly acknowledging the salutations of a crowd.
Simplifying the process of continuing healthcare funding. With healthcare ever a hot topic, those with a personal interest may wish to attend a talk at Sunrise Senior Living of Winchester. They will meet Barbara Buchan of Cheselden Continuing Care, who will explain how to secure continuing healthcare funding from the NHS, as well as attempting to simplify the continuing healthcare process and define what makes someone eligible for funding. A question and answer session will follow, and Barbara will be happy to talk about individual circumstances with advice on whether or not they should apply. A buffet with wines, teas and coffees will be served from 5:30 p.m, with the talk taking place from 6 to 7:30 p.m. The free talk is open to all on Tuesday, November the 12th. To book, call Ian Warren on 01962 658 027. That's Ian Warren on 01962 658 027. And that talk takes place at Sunrise Senior Living of Winchester.
And this one is a warning over bogus security phone calls. Police are warning Hampshire residents to beware bogus phone calls on home security. Reports have been received of unsolicited calls from a company offering intruder alarms, falsely claiming to be working with the police. The company appears to be targeting elderly and vulnerable people and claims it is in response to recent crimes in the area. Residents are reminded to research a company before agreeing to any sales visit and to remove their details from sales lists. Anyone with concerns should contact their Safer Neighbourhoods team on 101.
Storm News Roundup. Hampshire counts the cost of the hurricane. Fallen trees makes it misery for commuters. Winchester was hit by widespread disruption this week after one of the worst storms in decades. Sunday night's weather caused traffic chaos across the district, bringing down dozens of trees. Across Winchester, Salisbury and Southampton areas, Southern Electric said 9,000 homes were hit by power cuts. Villages near Alsford, including Cheriton, lost electricity at around 3 o'clock in the morning on Monday. But most homes had power back by Tuesday, while police said no one was harmed. Sergeant John Stribley of Winchester Police said on Monday there have been no injuries and no serious damage apart from trees closing major arteries. Crawley at one point was almost cut off. We've had officers out clearing trees working with the Highways Agency. In New Farm Road, Alsford, a tree fell onto but did not snap a power cable. Drivers passed underneath the tree, gambling that the cable would hold. In Winchester, part of a trunk fell onto the road on Magdalen Hill, and a large tree that we've already heard about crashed down onto Cheriton Road in full flood. One resident said, "The good thing is that the kids are not at Westgate School as it's half term, but the nursery moved into the new build last week. Luckily, this happened at night." There's a photograph, actually, of two kids, one in a bright pink top and the other in bright blue trousers, jumping up and down cheerfully on the tree in Cheriton Road, clearly having a whale of a time. While in Chandler's Ford, a cyclist with his backpack on one shoulder and his bicycle on the other clambers gloomily over a tree in order to get on his way. Trains were disrupted with a tree on the track just north of Winchester Railway Station. but by Tuesday morning all South West train services were restored except between Eastleigh and Fareham, where replacement bus services were operating due to a damaged signal at Fareham station. "Most people have been understanding," said Winchester Railway Station project manager Dean Pettit, who'd volunteered to help customer services on Monday morning. "We hope to run services as soon as we can, but we need to be safe to do so." The trees were delayed. There were delays on the A272 at Cheriton after a tree fell across the road near Hockley House. It was cleared by 8 in the morning, but it did cause tailbacks. Two trees crashed down on the A33 near Mitchell-Dever, completely blocking the carriageway. And there were reports of failed traffic signals across Hampshire, including the crossroads in Twyford and the junction of the A32 and A272 near West Meon. There were also problems on the A27 in North Baddesley and Junction 8 on the M3 near Dummer and the A339-A30 junction on the Black Ting roundabout. Commuters in Winchester were affected after a tree fell into St Cross Road near the junction with Five Bridges Road, forcing vehicles to use only one side of the road, and there was a tree down in Burnett Close in Wick, taking power cables with it. And at one point some 220,000 homes were without power across England.
It was literally a monster munch. There was bake-off-themed birthday delight at a teenager's party last Saturday when her mother revealed her winning bid in a charity competition for a chocolate mud cake. The Hampshire Chronicle last week reported how the 15-inch Le Croc cake, made by Bishop's Waltham baker Izzy Pink, was up for grabs to raise cash for Cancer Research UK. Knowing her daughter Hermione has a keen interest in alligators, Jo Campion McKinnon of Provine Gardens, Waltham Chase, snapped up the novelty cake with a bid of £60, and around 15 of her daughter's friends tucked in. Jo said Hermione was a big fan of the TV show Great British Bake Off. She said she was both surprised and delighted and had no idea one of her presents would be in the form of a cake. "I can't believe we won it with such a cheap bid, as such a fantastic prize would surely have cost more if bought in a shop. My older sister was at school with Izzy, and they have stayed in touch over the years on Facebook." The cake was also given a Halloween theme, with the crocodile holding aloft a pumpkin. And there's a delightful picture of Hermione herself with her cake, which is truly 15 inches high. It's green crocodile, and the crocodile has its mouth wide open with great white teeth and yellow eyes. I think the crocodile is laughing. It's got a band round its neck, a yellow band, and yes, in one of its paws it's holding a small pumpkin with a green hat and a big smiley face.
Local ownership plan a step closer. Farm scheme would be the first in the county. The first steps have been taken to strike a deal for local community ownership of the proposed Bullington Cross wind farm. Hampshire Energy Group, HEG, the local renewable energy cooperative, has now signed a formal memorandum of understanding with the wind farm developer EDF Energy Renewables to confirm the joint intent of the parties and the principles of the proposed deal. Under the terms of the Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, the proposed Bullington Cross Community Shared Ownership Scheme will give Hampshire Energy Group the option to purchase a revenue share of up to 10% in the wind farm development on behalf of its cooperative members. Funds generated by the wind farm stake will be used to pay an annual interest to members, with any surplus being reinvested by the cooperative in other local community-owned renewable energy and energy-efficient projects. Martin Heath, HEG spokesman, said, "This is a great step forward for community energy in Hampshire. This will give our local community the opportunity to invest in and benefit from wind farming. It's the first time a community wind farm has been developed in Hampshire and will hopefully be the first of many community energy projects in the county. The proposed Bullington Cross wind farm would comprise 14 turbines with a generating capacity of 28 megawatts of low carbon electricity, equivalent to the average annual needs of about 15,150 households. Earlier this year, EDF Energy Renewables submitted a planning application for the development site to Winchester City Council, Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council and Test Valley Borough Council. A decision on the planning application should be reached in early 2014. Darren Cuming, onshore wind development manager at EDF Energy Renewables, said, "The discussions with the Hampshire Energy Group have been very positive, and we are delighted to have reached this initial agreement."
Tony's cunning plan to sell history. Children were in for a treat at this year's Wessex Children's Book Festival when a renowned author launched his new book series. Sir Tony Robinson, who was knighted earlier this year for public and political services, entertained youngsters with his new series, Weird World of Wonders, at the Theatre Royal on Tuesday. And there's a picture of him with several brightly coloured books about The Weird World of Wonders, World War One; The Weird World of Wonders, British; The Weird World of Wonders, The Worst Children's Jobs in History. The actor, presenter and writer, whose previous works include Kings and Queens and The Worst Children's Jobs in History, said the inspiration for the new series was not solely about history, but about the presentation of it as well. He said, "The notion behind it is that everything is interesting. There are boring ways of talking, but it's not the thing itself that's boring. It's just a question about finding interesting ways of talking about it. A lot of adults tell me they used to hate history as a subject at school, but it's just part of who you are. And with that in mind, I wanted to bring out this new series." He's best remembered for playing the famously stupid Baldric in Blackadder, but he's also the former Time Team presenter, and said children's literature was vital to development, describing it as an experience that burns into the soul. "I've always revelled in my relationships with children, since having them myself, and now, since having grandkids, I revel even more," he said. "I think it's so important that we provide a space in our children's hearts for them to wonder. We have a responsibility to children, and it ought to be a pleasurable responsibility."
Work has started on a project to bring new community facilities to Stockbridge. The £134,000 scheme will see a new pavilion built in Stockbridge Recreation Ground, which will be available for its many users. It will house changing facilities and toilets, including one for disabled users, and a baby changing facility. As well as sports pitches, the recreation ground has a popular play area and is well used by local youth groups, schools and dog walkers. The project is being led by Stockbridge Recreation Ground Trust. Committee member Paul Barker said, "The new pavilion will benefit everyone who uses and enjoys the recreation ground. It will also enable Stockbridge Football Club to meet the ground requirements of the Football Association and maintain its position in the Wessex League, and will also benefit its youth teams." Several organisations have contributed to the project, including a £57,542 grant from the Football Foundation, £25,000 from Viridor Credits Environmental Company, and the Viola Environmental Trust, which awarded £20,000. The Football Association's National Sports Centre Trust has also given £10,000, with the Recreation Ground Trust putting £27,500 of its own money into the project.
And here we have hoping for a bountiful, beautiful autumn. Autumn is in full bloom, and it is hoped that Hampshire's offerings will win one more county attraction, even more goals than before. Display of cuttings from Exbury Gardens in the New Forest were on show at the RHS London Shades of Autumn show at the RHS Horticultural Halls. Head gardener John Anderson, who is pictured here with pruning a hickory tree, which is a mass of brilliant yellow leaves with dark brown stems, and his colleague Linda Runicles, showcased what the gardens have to offer, including a range of leaves, berries and fruits, such as the dead man's fingers, a blue finger-like fruit that they have been growing with pride at Exbury. In recent years, Exbury has celebrated numerous gold awards in a number of categories, and it is hoped that this year will be no different.
Lunchtime opening for Guildhall Bar. Winchester City Council could open the public bar at the Guildhall during the day. officers will produce a study on whether the Wintonian Bar could be opened to the public at lunchtimes. It has been open at lunchtimes in the past. Speaking at a cabinet meeting last Wednesday, council leader Councillor Keith Wood said a financial case needed to be made to make sure the move would be beneficial. Head of Estates Kevin Warren said the idea was part of a wider plan to refurbish the room and make it more attractive for events. It came as Cabinet approved a variety of other proposals for the building, including extending the catering service by 3 years and allowing external banners to be erected to advertise events.
A private hospital in Winchester has appointed a new executive director. BMI Sarum Road Hospital announced Nicola Aspinall's appointment at the end of last month. Ms Aspinall said, "I'm delighted to be here. It's a great opportunity to work in a hospital that has a long established reputation with excellent facilities. I'm certainly very comfortable in an environment where I can get involved with the day-to-day operations, working with a team that make it all happen." She said, "I feel Winchester is somewhere I know I can use my skills to build and develop new services and pathways."
That, I'm afraid, is the end of the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers. Thanks to Ellen Gray.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with the laminated card when you've finished listening. And goodbye again.